How's it going? I'm Bill Gorm, lure manufacturer from the out of compliance, in compliance, but not in compliance state of North Carolina. As I was explained to it in our commission meeting last week, I was told to reach out and say our actions were a conservation equal to a June 20th closure, whatever that means. As far as my experience, I've coveted fish for the past 10 years from Ocracoke Island up into the Chesapeake Bay. As far as stock abundance, it amazes me how they keep coming back every year. We've had good years like this year. It's awful for northeastern North Carolina. The weather just doesn't allow us to get to them. The water's been warm enough. They're already up here, which are up here a lot in May. But as far as the cold water temperature, it's where they stack up. Just didn't happen this year. So conservation really happened this year through Mother Nature. Where site cast fisheries, that's usually the case. And as far as getting better at it, a site cast fishery that requires clear skies, blue water, or clearish water, bait, right tide, will never be able to control that. That's Mother Nature. I believe they're very healthy. I have presented a couple options. I know North Carolina's options weren't ideal to the recreational fishermen. They were fair to the shore-based anglers, which I would like to support in Virginia for those tackle shops that I speak for here. As far as catch and release, I've had three shops with my bucktail orders still on hold, waiting for your decision. Charter captains in Ocracoke and Hatteras are booking trips from residents of South Carolina leaving there since they closed their season in May. So catch and release, I believe, should be a choice as long as it's within legal limits, so you can't exceed your legal limit and then choose to be a catch and release angler. The cobia limits that we were under for 20 years before last year, and the fishery has only gotten better. I've had constant contact with the South Atlantic and Dr. Duval. Greg with the South Atlantic asked me to apply to be a panelist on their assessment for mackerel. And the one thing I could say about this graph is, if you see in the mid-90s, it peaks, and then it's ultimately a steady decline since then. Well, Virginia to North Carolina came under the management of the South Atlantic in the mid-1990s. I questioned the South Atlantic repeatedly with no answer of, well, if you've added Virginia, how come that line didn't increase, given that Virginia tagging data has 80% of the tags returned back in the bay, or recaptured back in the bay, no matter whether it's 3 days or 3 months. So that supports the theory of a resident population, which should have increased that graph. If I prove wrong, or they say I'm wrong, the entire zone split is bogus, because that's what it was based off of, fish in Port Royal. I think I'm about up. Non-compliance, please. Save your tackle shops. Save your fishermen. Request fair and equitable allocation within the South Atlantic. I would suggest, if you can, if they will approve, this council being allowed to appoint one, if not two, along with Rob, members, so you can have three voting members, one from the fishing community and scientific community, and your staff, because as we have found out, it's important to have diversity and representation, even within the South Atlantic. But thank you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Gorman. Is there anybody else? This is last call. I'll make sure everybody understands that to If you have anything else to say, now's the time, because when I close the public hearing, put it before the commission for discussion and action, there's no more public comment. Anyone? Seeing none. Well, thank you all for your civility and for your input and for the work you've done in the past and you show on this issue. The public hearing is now closed. Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Chief O'Reilly.
I know it's been a long situation with this, and I appreciate the comments from the public, but and I'm not here to rebut any comments, but there were questions about some of the information, and we certainly could. I know that Joe Cimino could tell you concretely about the East Florida situation, but you may not necessarily have time for that. Joe Cimino can tell you about the higher average weight, even though the comments were that they're sort of imputed. Yes, there were imputed weights. But just to know there are answers. The other thing I wanted to mention, which is on a personal level, I'm going to be working with the commission for a while. And I want you to know that I have no fear of another state. Even Congressman Whitman sent out an email saying that I had fear.
No, Congressman Whitman talked to me personally, and I sent out the email saying what he said.
As a accomplished wrestler, I have no fear, especially of that. So I have to work with the commission. I found that to be incendiary, and I normally would not make any comment, but I want you to trust.
He did say it in a nice way, though.
That as we go forward, there's no fear. Concern. You've heard my concern. I do have concern. I'm in my 29th year in fisheries management. I've been the proxy for the commissioner at the Mid-Atlantic Council and at ASMFC for over 4 years. I know the system. I have concern, and that's as simple as it gets. I do want to make a few comments that I've neglected to make before but were brought out by our speakers. As part of the framework measures, the South Atlantic Council will also look at different seasons instead of for 2017, instead of a January 1 to end of the year season, they will look at a May 1 to April 30th season, a June 1 to May 31st season. That's going to be arbitrated, I'm sure, by the other states, but nonetheless, that's something we haven't had before. As far as the June 20th closure, when Mike Larkin worked up our data, he sent me an email and he said it's ironic that when that was put in, a seasonal closure was put in as the measure if the ACL was overachieved. No one wanted to reduce any bag limits. No one wanted to change any size limits. They had confidence that there'll be a season closure there and we won't have any problems with the ACL. So it's not as if that wasn't thought of. As far as all the national standards, that's really up to the National Marine Fisheries Service and their lawyers. There's really nothing that we can do to address that. I do think that we do have an indirect mandate, and that was specified. And when I started out today, I said we're in sort of an indirect place here. I think with 2016, with the comment about the lack of a reporting form available so that anglers and charter and everyone else can report to us, that's part of the regulation now. We certainly didn't intend for it not to be in 2016. So that's still part of this. It's a little awkward because whatever is done today, that better be ready tomorrow. So we're going to have to rely on our very exceptional IT people, MIS people, to get that going. So that can be available, and that's been thought about for months by everyone. So again, I think the idea of the citation question has been answered. Yes, you can have less 50 to 55 inch fish, and you can have smaller fish have more of them. I mean, that's just the pyramid of sizes. So that's all that is. In terms of what might be reasonable, I think that's something that, you know, really you've had all the information to decide on what's reasonable. And I think as far as the GAF question, Mr. Zedron, it appears that it not being in the regulation, even though I penciled it in, there's not a whole lot of support for the gaffing. Reminder that there's about 5% discard mortality, so that's something to keep track of. And as far as mitigation in 2017, which was mentioned, I think that's what 2017 is all about. The framework is already up and running to some extent. It's going to be talked about in June. In August, it'll be voted on, I guess. In September, it'll be finally endorsed one way or the other for what happens in 2017. So that is definitely something that's going forward. And unfortunately, and staff did try, the fairness situation is something that with the June 20th closure, and with the fact that no one had any advance notice and couldn't have thought of anything else, we don't have the same ability in 2016 that we will have in 2017. And we'll push as hard as we can, and, you know, that's our commitment. So thank you very much, and if there are any questions, that's fine.
I have one question here. You mentioned the possibility of the South Atlantic Council adopting new seasons. Could those become state-by-state seasons?
According to, I hadn't thought of that, but according to that email from Mr. Waugh, if I can get it up fairly quickly here to bring that one up, that might help your answer your question, Commissioner. There it is. Okay, so at the end, Mr. Waugh says he spoke to the General Counsel, and at the very end, he said, I'll let our plan team know about the desire to look at different regulations in different areas. Now, I don't know whether it could. I think this is more thought of as, instead of the calendar year basis, you start June 1, and or you start May 1, and then you roll it around. Now, there'll be some arbitration about that, because you know some states like Georgia and South Carolina will, you know, want to look at May. We would definitely want to look at June, so you can already see there's some, you know, arbitration there. The other thing that was mentioned, I think, is there is a request from Mr. Waugh that it be looked at for May to have a federal waters catch and release only to help. I don't know how much that would help, but it would help some. So in May, catch and release only. South Carolina is going to be, as now, catch and release only in the southern portion of their state waters. So those are some other things with the framework. Is that?
Yeah, that helps, but let me really drive the point home. If it does end up on a state-by-state season, that would benefit Virginia potentially?
Yeah. The rolling closure that was mentioned would benefit Virginia, and in a way, that's what that proposal where we divided things up with 215,000 pounds. It wasn't exactly rolling closure, but it was along those lines to give each state.
Oh, now I sound like I'm badgering the witness here, but it sounds like there's some things that can be done within the current framework and adjusting that would be very beneficial to us down the road. Is that a fair assessment?
That's the way I look at it, and staff looks at it. Okay. We did not have that optimism several weeks ago.
Mr. Francis, did I see your hand?
Yes, sir. Mr. O'Reilly. How does the commercial fishery figure into these regulations, or do they?
The commercial fishery figures in with 50,000 pounds of an ACL, because the commercial fishery did not go over the ACL. So they are not at an ACT. They're not limited that way. I think they had 42,500 pounds for 2015. However, the commercial fishery, that 50,000 plus the 620,000, really 630,000 for 2017, that was looked at to see if the total stock ACL was exceeded as well. So it played into that. And I think there's some good points about the commercial hook and line. That was a, you know, deliberative process that went through FMAC a few times and came to the commission. And I know when we had an FMAC meeting, there was a moment of everyone's going to rush out and get the commercial hook and line licenses. Well, there are 200 commercial hook and line licenses. And in order to obtain a commercial hook and line license, you have to be a registered commercial fisherman, which can be done through the transfer process. But then you have to show, as does the person who transfers the license, 1,000 pounds of seafood sales in the previous 2 years. So little by little it can happen, and there have been some that have done that. I'd say six, but I might be off on that. That sounds right. So, you know, that has been the situation with commercial hook and line since the beginning. If you remember all the flounder disputes about commercial hook and line having 14 inches back when we had 19 or 18 and a half. So, you know, that's been a situation all along, but that is limited entry.
Thank you. Other questions from the commission?
I guess reporting, copy reporting, that needs some work. And so the way it's written is it needs some tweaking. And I don't know that we want to do that today unless we're going to be fishing past June 20th. If we're not fishing past June 20th, it's kind of pointless. If we're not fishing, we can take our time with it. If we are going to be fishing past June 20th, and we're going to make that part of our management plan, then we need to have that discussion tonight.
Well, that's a very pertinent point, because when Joe Cimino was developing this, he noted that some of the other permitting needed some refinement as well. And as we move into this mandatory reporting with loss of permit privileges next year, we do want to be very careful about how that permit looks. So I agree with that.
So I guess that's my comment to this group, is that if we decide to go past June 20th, then we need to have a discussion on that. I'm not opposed to mandatory reporting. It needs some tweaking. The way it's written now is not great.
Thank you.
I don't need to go into that right in a minute.
Well, it seems to me that we have a threshold question to address before we decide to go elsewhere, and that is whether or not we'll comply with the indirect order to abide by the June 20th closure. Now, we do that, all the other rest of the discussion on size and season limits and whatnot here would be moot. But I don't want to forestall discussion of size and season limits and extension of this fishery, or just a total noncompliance and status quo, for fear that it would prejudice some sort of discussion or decision on June 20th. So I'm kind of in a conundrum on how to go forward with this. Mr. Zedrin.
I think you're right. I think we need to make a decision first whether we're going to stick with the 20th or not, and if we stick with the 20th, it will save us a whole lot of time. But that being said, I think one of the big things that I see here, I don't know what the status of the resource is, or the catch limits or all that kind of stuff. But a big thing for me is what economic effect is this going to have on the Commonwealth? And I heard it from a lot of people out there, and not only those kind of people, but the tackle shops and the restaurants and the gas dealers and everybody else. So I think that we're not only talking about these guys fishing. I think we're talking about a whole economic issue within the state. And I, for one, I don't know what I've heard from everybody, and I've listened, but I don't know what the true facts are. If you told me to write down all the true facts, I don't know. I think we need to find those true facts before we go cutting everybody's life off. I would think that we start off by saying, are we going to close or not? And then start talking about what can we do for our economy. I'm not just these guys. I'm talking about everybody out there that has an effect from this cobia fishery. So I think you're right. I think we need to start right from the scratch and determine whether we're going to go in compliance with the feds or not.
Mr. Ballard.
I understand your point of the conundrum. Possibly suggest that we have a non-binding vote on the compliance or non-compliance, because if we decide not to have any additional limits placed, that might affect the vote on June 20th or not. So if there's a way we can kind of take a temperature of the commission on that issue, move forward, tackle the other issues, and then do the official vote all wrapped up into one, what I'd be in favor of.
I think that sounds kind of reasonable, but I think we're going to have to be a little flexible with that along the way. Mr. Frantz?
Yeah, the only thing I would like to know before we do this, maybe we could get some reminders of what could happen if we're not in compliance.
Mrs. Dalton?
I agree. I've got a question because I've heard back and forth. I know Mr. Neal said my question as far as ASMFC and how that could affect us in the future didn't matter, but Mr. Deem spoke and mentioned COBIA being managed by ASMFC next year, in which case it would matter if we were out of compliance. So I'm still confused on that issue.
I can do some of this, I think, and perhaps Mr. Hull can do some of this, if it's all right, Commissioner, to address
yep.
that question. Okay, so the avenues for us, if we don't comply, would be that, and we've been told this, that initially the federal waters would be clamped down even before June 20th next year. Depending on the amount of data, depending on going over the ACL, and keep in mind the comments that we had about the single year, that's probably going to happen again. So there's going to be a 2016 ACL that's going to have to be matched up to the 2016 harvest. Otherwise, we're over the ACL if they don't change that. If they keep what they have now at 2015 and divide the 1.5 million in two, we're over the 2017 ACL. So I think we can safely say they're going to change that to a single year, and we'll be right back to where we started in 2015. Now, this next part is, depending on how good the fishery is, if you want to call it that, or how big the fishery is, in North Carolina especially, and in Virginia, then federal waters could be closed. And I'm not saying that. The executive director told me that. They could be closed. That still puts us back in the same position we're in now as to waiting to see if A, the South Atlantic Council, after they hear all this, not abiding by June 20th, they decide to go on an amendment trail, and they do an amendment that makes sure that that ACL can be established. In other words, it's whether, I'm not going to say whether we like it or not, but it's just a fact the South Atlantic Council has the management authority for COBIA. And the National Marine Fisheries Service has authority over the South Atlantic Council. So that's why we're indirect, why we're in a bad position. So that happens in year two. There's possibly an amendment that would really put us in a bad position as far as our ability to harvest COBIA. That can happen. And that's not my words. That's the words of talking to South Atlantic. What's more speculative on my part is that what Mr. Hull indicated, this year, Dr. Crabtree told Dr. Duvall that nymphs would not do anything preemptive. They would not do anything preemptive. There's a reason that Dr. Crabtree said that, I think. I think he said that because he knows that National Marine Fisheries Service has the ability to start ratcheting things down. So why go after a state right now in year one? In year two, that may be different. There'll be a lot of pressure on National Marine Fisheries Service. Now, we have to assume here, and Dr. Neal may be absolutely right, we may not make the ACL and everything works out. But we have to assume that there's going to be a fairly good harvest with only, 620,000 pounds to go around and really only 500,000 with the ACT, with North Carolina and Virginia, especially. So if that happens, then I don't think it takes long to get preemptive authority in motion. This is my speculation. I don't think proving an OSHA, or not an OSHA, an EEZ fishery means that it's based on the predominance of harvest, state waters, federal waters. I think it can be based on where the EEZ fisheries are taking place. And as I said earlier, if you look at it, it's probably around 2.5 out of 4 states, because North Carolina and Virginia has split their allegiance pretty much over time. So that's the speculation part. The ASMSC, there's no guarantees that there will be an ASMSC plan, because I'm suspecting this is not a fast track for the ASMSC. We'll meet in August. In August, there'll be a white paper, and it will go over the 3 different types of jurisdictional authority. Joint management, where the feds have the lead. Complementary management, which we're all going to figure out what that means exactly, I think, but it's not the same as joint management. And then you have exclusive management by the ASMFC. That is going to play on in the ASMFC through 2016. And then count a year, I would say. So Bob Beal, executive director of ASMFC, has already said he's not even sure he can get this in place in 2017. However, I think if certain conditions arise, it's more convenient for ASMFC to move quickly. And I think that's where we want to be. But you heard my comments before. It doesn't guarantee success right away. We're still going to have to face situations where allocation is always a battle. What's the allocation time frame? All of those things. But I think Virginia's in pretty good shape no matter what the allocation battle is, because we've had a strong fishery for so many years. The years where it was not so strong is balanced out by the years where it was. So that's my take on your question, Ms. Haney-Kelly.
All right, let me say a couple things here. One of it I think is pretty obvious to everyone in the room here. Nobody up here wants to be here in this position. I hope you all can see that. We didn't ask for this. We didn't go seeking it out. It's been imposed upon us. It's very clear that the South Atlantic Council didn't have a good management plan. Whether you believe in the numbers or not, and that's where we're at. And they're going to have to fix it, and they are going to fix it. And hopefully do that in a way here that it doesn't hurt Virginia and gives us a couple of breaks. I think we more than deserve it. Bigger picture, a couple of things here. I don't think there's really any doubt, or at least from my perspective, I think most people here would probably agree with it. There's a lot more people fishing for cobia in Virginia than has historically been the case. We see more people out there. I think some of the testimony here kind of backs that up here. We're hearing from charter boat captains that 20 or 30% of their income is based on the cobia fishery. That wasn't the case 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years ago. We hear recreational anglers that they've invested thousands of dollars to put towers on their boat. That wasn't the case 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years ago. This fishery has changed. When we see spawning stock biomass decline through stock assessments, identified through stock assessments, and we see fishing effort increase, we see sight casting being a very efficient form of fishery, of fishing and successful fishing for cobia. Well, we might not like the numbers, but I'm concerned about the trends. So, to that end, I think we need to keep it in mind here is that while we have an obligation, I think Captain DeMasi might have mentioned this, for the citizens here and the participants within this fishery, I think our
our first allegiance is to the stock and to the sustainable stock for the future. It behooves us not at all to do something that's short-sighted and short-term at the expense of our future. So as the Commission's weighing these matters here, please keep in mind that these are some of the factors that we have to take into account. I think that the South Atlantic Council has realized that they have fallen asleep on the job. That's one way I think of looking at it. I think that they're going to be committed here to fixing what their management plan is. I think that there's some things that we can hope for and we can work for that'll benefit Virginia for down the road here. I'm more concerned because I'm looking a little bit further down the road than just next year, but it seems pretty clear to me that this is going to move into the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. I think it should be there. This is their expertise. These are inshore fisheries. They have accountability measures. They can set up state-by-state quotas. It's what they do for dozens of species. We wouldn't be in this position if this fishery was managed as a managed fisheries at the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. We wouldn't be here with what our harvests would be impacting other states to the degree it is, and vice versa. We wouldn't be here fighting over what's a fair allotment for each state once the state-by-state quotas are established. And now I've been hearing for 4 months now the concerns about what's a fair thing to do in Virginia as opposed to what would be fair or unfair in North Carolina. And, you know, setting each state up against each other is just not a very viable, effective way to manage fisheries for the future. So I've been saying a lot of different things here, but I hope you all get the sense that I don't like where we're at. I don't like having to be here with this decision. I'm scared what the future would bring if we end up before the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission in a position where we, from their perceptions, will have caused the problem and refused to be part of the solution, and we would be there asking them to give us a quota. They have no tolerance for people that are out of compliance. So to that end, long term, from my perspective, doing nothing is not an option. Doing nothing and rolling the dice in the hopes that nothing happens, that there are no paybacks, to me, that's an unacceptable risk, because it's entirely foreseeable here that we will end up fighting for a good quota for the state of Virginia in the future within a year, year and a half. And we will be hamstrung if we are viewed as pariahs because we have caused a problem, refused to be part of the solution, and done nothing. So to that end, all I'm saying from my threshold question here, I'm not saying June 20th or a closure or not, but I'm saying doing nothing, from my perspective, that's not an option. That's short-term, and long-term will bite us sure as God made little green apples. I've said more than I expected to say, but I want everybody to know my heart, and I want you all to know and to give these people up here some credit for making a tough decision that was not of their making, and a hand that they didn't ask for that was a bad hand. So I'm done saying what I was going to say, what I'm saying. I believe Mr. Neal should
be. Yeah, well, all right. I'm hearing a lot of ifs, ands, buts, maybes, what might happen kind of thing in the future. I know if we close this summer, we're closed. It's 100%. All right. The consequences, if we did nothing, is nothing if the ACL is not exceeded. The ACT is meaningless. It's just the ACL. We exceeded it last year. If you believe the Emirate numbers now, we exceeded. We did not exceed in 2014. We did not exceed in 2013. Yep, blah, blah, blah. And so if we did nothing, I can't tell you, and none of you here can tell me. We act like if we do nothing, we're going to exceed the ACL. And there's no indication of that we're going to exceed the ACL. There's just not. If you want to tell me there's been a change in the fishery from 2016 to 2000, I'll agree with that. But if you're going to tell me there's a change in the fish from 2014 to 2015, I'm on the water. It's not true. And so I guess my point is if we do go over the ACL, the consequences, to answer everyone's question, is that the first thing they can do is shorten the season in federal waters, all the way up to closure, as Rob has pointed out, just like they've done in Red Snapper. The states that have been out of compliance with have faced no other consequences. And so I'm just not seeing this, ASMSC may treat us unfairly down the road if they take up COVIA in 2018, when there's been no indication of that either. The states have gone out of compliance, with New Jersey with Tall Tog and New York with Flounder and the Elvers. With ASMC, if they manage COBIA, well then yes, they have authority in state waters. The SFMSC does not. And so this going, first of all, the word compliance is just wrong. We're going to be in compliance. Our federal waters are going to be closed, period. They don't have jurisdiction in state waters, so we're not going out of compliance. We're deciding what we're doing in our own state waters, where we have right now, to this date, sole jurisdiction. That will likely change. But I guess, as I have not seen any indication that SFMSC has punished, other than making them go back in compliance, New York when they were with Flounder, or Jersey with Tall Talk. I don't see that Virginia has been able to take any of their quota or to get any advantage of that, because we haven't been in compliance all the time. And so I just these fathom fears. The one thing I know that can happen if the ACL is exceeded is a shortening, an earlier closure of federal waters. Now, we're talking about 2016. We're not talking about doing this stuff in 2017, 2018. We're here because SAFMC and NOAA screwed up. They flat screwed up. Their management plan is requiring them to violate federal law. We got a letter from three congressmen saying they're violating federal law. Okay. But if they didn't do this closure on June 20th, they'd be violating federal law then too. Where they screwed up is they made a plan where they only had one option. They made a plan, their only option is to close, and they had no option to be fair to the state. So they screwed up. That doesn't mean we have to perpetuate that. And we're talking about 2016. The COBIA population, I promise you, is not going to collapse if we fish this summer. But these guys are going to lose their fishery, 100%. I just can't, based on the fact that we don't even know if doing nothing based on 2014, 2013, 2012, that we'd be over this number. We're over this number 1 year. And so anything, and this sounds like I'm totally arguing against what you've been saying, but I'm not. My point is staff says in here that it doesn't, what is the first thing they said in here? It doesn't make any difference, likely irrelevant to the degree of compliance we are out of. And I totally disagree with that. It does make a difference. Anything we do, any reductions we make, makes going over the ACL less likely. And so if you follow Finn Fish Advisory Committee, you will be less likely to go over the ACL. Chair of the Mid-Atlantic Council that Rob mentioned he serves on has texted me twice when I'm up here, and he's recommending something like a one-fish vessel limit, anything to avoid major overages in 2017 closure. So, you know, you can look at that if you want. But it's so basically, obviously, I'm not going to support closing June 20th. I am open to other things to reduce our chances of going over the ACL. But I can't tell you we would go over the ACL if we did nothing. And the assumption has been, because we went way over last year, we will go over this year. And you can't make that assumption. You just can't. We don't have a clue what the numbers will come in this year. But we don't have a clue that if we close the fishery down, that those numbers wouldn't come back and say we're still over. I mean, it was Murph back then, but we had like a record catch of striped bass in the Chesapeake Bay after Isabel. I mean, and that was another one we fought. And that's what it is. We didn't have peers. So anyway, I don't support closing on June 20th. I'll be willing to talk about other measures, but we should keep our fishing open this year, and then let's work on 2017, 2018.
What was the advisory recommendation?
Their recommendation was a three-fish boat limit, but only allowed one good fish.
Oh, come on. You guys were so good up until now.
Dr. Neal, let me just clarify one thing here. When I talk about Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission's longtime enmity towards noncompliance, no, there is not, and as Rob said, states that come back into compliance are welcome back into the fold. That's certainly true. But I'm saying that in this particular case, at this particular time, that's a special concern because the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, in all likelihood, will be establishing state-by-state quotas. I mean, to establish the quotas per state that's going to last for decades is a real important thing, in my mind, for our future. So all I'm saying here is that a potential ramification is we may not get the benefit of the doubt for our long-term quota if we're coming, making the arguments that we should get 40% or 43% of the quota at a time where we're viewed, perceived as not having done anything in light of this particular issue. That's all I'm saying.
Right, or it may not. You know, so like I said, this is a fear, yeah, maybe, but we don't have just 2016 to deal with this. We have 2017 to deal with this. And the ASMSC, 2018 is a realistic number for them if they choose to take it up.
Yep.
And so we have 2017. Let's get to 2017. And so I just do not see just closing our fishery because SAMSC and NOAA screwed up. But I am for conservation. I'm out there tagging Kobe and collecting DNA samples and we're going to have better science. It's coming. The studies that have been done, they each have problems. Tagging data is limited. We've got better science is coming. And so it is coming. It's just not here today. And so it's going to take a little time. But to shut down these guys today on this short of notice when they bought boats and haven't had time to make any other plans, if they have till next year saying, okay, we realize now we may be looking at some tougher regulations, well, they've got a year to plan. You know, they've got a year to decide what to do. And I think that the stock is not going to collapse if we fish this summer. And if we do take up more restrictive management plans, whether it's boat limits, increase the size, whatever it is, it'll make it even less likely for us to go over that ACL.
Mr. Erskine.
I appreciate all staff's hard work on this issue. It's obviously pretty important, and everybody's public comment as well as the letters. It's obviously important to you all as well. I just wanted to make a couple observations, and the first one is that as much as Mr. Neal talks about we don't want to project into the future, we don't know, I agree with that. We don't know what's going to take place. However, in my mind, we're making a decision here and now for 2016. That's what's in front of us, and we have to look at that information. But in my mind, for projecting this to 2017, I have to be able to be comfortable with the chance for no fishery in federal waters, because that, in my mind, is the worst-case scenario that could happen. So if something happens, South Atlantic Council, ASMFC, whatever it might be, the worst-case scenario is that you do not have a fishery in 2017. So if you're comfortable with that, then that's what you have to project forward. In my mind, it's the worst-case scenario. I don't agree with the data. I think it is contingent upon everybody in this room and everybody else that's a recreational fisherman that you have mandatory reporting. You have to have better data because it's only going to protect yourself. Also, I'd make another recommendation that South Atlantic Council might have been flawed or representation or however the claim is. If this goes to ASMFC, you have to become involved in the process. And that's why I asked Mr. French whether or not he had made his comments to the council or to ASMFC when it's there. So if you're not involved in the process, they don't know. And these people aren't always directed with the best available science. And this is eerie because with the commercial menhaden fishery, 4 years ago, there was faulty science, and that was quote-unquote the best available science, and that fishery was reduced 20%. And now, 4 years later, we have a robust assessment. Overfishing was not occurring. the stock was not overfished, and we yet to have the 20% return to the fishery. So my point being, your science is your science, but until you have better science, we don't have a movement forward to be able to project like Mr. Neal says. So I agree. Don't look at, we may have an ACL that we hit or we don't. But in my mind, if you don't project for the worst case scenario and be comfortable with that and know what you're focusing on, and that could be no fishery in federal waters in 2017, then that's how we have to look, that's how I have to look at it moving forward.
Mr. Cedron.
I got a way of making it. I'm going to put a motion on the table and then just see where it goes. And then, you know, then maybe we can tweak it back and forth or whatever. You know, I'm amenable to some change. So I would move that we take and extend the fishing to August 30th, 2016 with the two fish per boat limit, one over 50 inches and minimum 40 inches, and that you also can't use a gaff. No gaff.
Add in mandatory reporting.
And mandatory reporting. And the thing about the license, to get the free license and then you report.
Well, that's, we need to talk about that, but it'd be mandatory reporting.
So that would be close the season August 30th, did you say?
Yes.
Size and vessel limit, same again, please.
Two fish per boat per day, one over 50 inches, minimum of 40 inches, can't use a gaff, and mandatory reporting.
And this is just
well,
for 2016.
Yeah, 2016. That's for 2016.
Hold one second. Staff had prepared a variety of options that are kind of along the line of what you're saying here, and they did some calculations on how it would get to 215,000 pounds, which is what West Blow considers to be a fair quota if we had a quota. So instead,
I'm amenable to that.
Let's see if
we weren't moving. So
there'll be some calculations behind all these charts here that go towards where you're trying to go to. Let's take a look at them, and maybe there's something in there that helps. There you go. So this is what staff prepared. That was based on a 215,000 pound quota that is unofficial, it's unsanctioned, but I think that we've heard some ample testimony here that that would be a fair quota for Virginia if indeed we had an actual quota for Virginia. So this is what staff has calculated would be the impacts and when we would need to close the season if we went for those size and daily vessel limits.
40 years.
These were done, if I may.
If you would, please.
When Member Ballard has a question for us as to what did we really do with 215,000 pounds, what is that supposed to be? And, you know, depending on where you go from here, staff also has other options. So everyone should understand that since this has been worked on since March, there are plenty of options that you can look at. It just depends on the commission when you get to that deciding point. So, for example, you know, you have 37 inches with three fish with three or more angles, one fish per person. Season closes July 24th. That was FMAX proposal, and we have more. So I have another table that I can provide, but what I recall is that if you look at a preferred alternative of not abiding by the June 20th closure, at least from staff's viewpoint, it would be 41 inches, a vessel limit of two fish with two or more anglers aboard. So if you're by yourself, you have one fish, same for shore and pier, and the season closes on July 30th. But the table you looked at previously is, for consideration as well. And I know that there are a lot of different options, but you have to understand that we really did not get all our information until within the last couple of weeks. So we had to work up different scenarios, as did Mike Larkin initially from the National Marine Fisheries Service. So I just wanted to provide those to you. I'm very slowly going back to what I showed you a second ago, I hope, and maybe not, maybe a couple more. That's the sampling. So there you go. And I really wanted to make a comment about something said earlier, if it's acceptable, and that is just a comment from, you know, the what ifs. Well, the what ifs are, you know, it's awkward, but we always have to keep in mind, National Marine Fisheries Service is going to close federal waters, but 82% of the harvest was from state waters from Georgia to Virginia, and all that data went into this closure. So it almost makes you wonder how some states who are federal waters only, who still have some fishery left, what they're thinking by that closure. And I think that's why Georgia reacted to the June 9th straw proposal that we gave them when we called about the 215,000 pounds. So that's why the commissioner is talking about the ASMSC, because you have a chance to, you know, get the back and forth that you need to make sure that no one is hampered unreasonably. I'm certainly not going to say that the plan is perfect, but remember, there was an opportunity to make this plan better, but no one knew there was going to be this type of harvest. So they just said, well, make a season closure. Don't change our bag limits. Don't do boat limits, just make a season closure. So here we are. What no one anticipated is what we're dealing with. And, you know, so clearly the ACL is what Mike Larkin of National Marine Fisheries Service designed for June 20th. So, and also it's 2013, 2014, 2015 data that went into this whole process. Even NIMS, they may not have said spike, but they did say, well, that's pretty high. Let's bring in some of the earlier years. And you had that graphic up just a moment ago of the comparison of 2013 and 2014. So, thank you.
give me 1 second. Mr. Seabrook, let me ask a different threshold question. Maybe this will... I mean, from what I can see, we have three options. One is do nothing status quo. Two, close June 20th as we're indirectly kind of required to. Three, formulate our own size and season vessel limit, closure, these kind of dates. One question. How about I throw it out here? It's not an official one, but is there anybody in favor here of just status quo, riding it out and hoping for the best?
I would be not opposed to that, but I'm uncomfortable with that. His motion is very restrictive, more restrictive than any of these guys want, but at least give them a summer and give them a summer to fish. So you're trying to hold it off, but I'm seconding his motion.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I'm not trying to hold you up. I just wanted to make sure that we didn't have a hidden majority here that wanted to just hang it up, great hearing, we're going to let it ride, meeting's adjourned.
Yeah, that would have us closing before North Carolina. They're opening to September 30th.
Oh, my question isn't whether or not we should close to the 20th. My question is whether or not we should do nothing.
Okay, well, I've already seconded it.
Okay, so I think it's really clear that the commission doesn't want to do nothing, so we're going to do something. So that's something. So we have a motion by Mr. Zedron for a 40-inch size limit, two fish per day,
per boat
limit, not per person, two fish per vessel. One of the fish can be over 50 inches,
right, no gap in mandatory reporting.
No gap mandatory reporting, and it's a second by Mr. Neal. Let's discuss that. Mr. Erskine.
I have a question for Rob, if I may. With this table, it says that it's based off of the ACT. Why would it not be based off the ACL? As Mr. Larkin, you said previously, had determined.
The ACT is triggered when the ACL is exceeded. So we are fishing to the 500,000 pounds, all the states. The distinction is, as long as we don't go over the ACL, then we won't have to be facing this again in 2017. But the ACT is the official line in the sand.
Okay. Thank you.
More discussion?
I have a question for Mr. Ryan.
Chief, don't go far.
I'm going to stand up, and I apologize for sitting down.
With this mandatory reporting here, if we made it that you had to report it the day that you caught it, number one, can our VMRC receive that data that quick? And number two is that if it looks like the catch is super, could we then maybe put in this motion that if we're approaching the maximum, that we put revisit this?
No, the problem is you don't know what the other states have done. The ACL is a coastwide number, and so we would not know when we were approaching that.
And ideally, we would very much like to do that. We've been working with mandatory reporting since 1993. It is a tremendous task. And what we have found out is that online reporting, computer-based reporting, is more difficult to work with than the sheets that are turned in. That's the majority of our mandatory reporting today. We haven't quite gotten to the point where we can have recreational anglers have an app or an application and have a smartphone or some other device to report. That's being worked on at the ASMFC. That's being worked on at the South Atlantic Council, maybe other councils too. It is very difficult. And first of all, to remind everyone, we worry about, I hate to say compliance, but that's what we worry about. That's what mandatory reporting is all about, is compliance. And I don't know or have an estimate about how many cobia fishermen there are. I mean, I might be able to come up close, but Dr. Neal might have a better estimate. And so once there's not reporting, you're on the phone, and you're saying your reports aren't in, and you're doing that back and forth. And the commission process, from our mandatory reporting, the excuses, and I don't mean that in a bad way to anyone, but the excuses that come out as to why reports weren't done is amazing. So it's a great idea. Eventually, that would be fantastic, that we could have our pulse on a fishery and that we could say, you're getting close to a limit and the commission could take an action the following meeting. I mean, that's ideal, but not for
And it might be possible on the state level, like 2018 beyond, if we do to go to state quotas.
Yeah.
And then we could monitor it on a state basis. We just can't make the other states.
It has to be then. Right. Then it would have to be set up that way.
It could be done then. So we got a lot of options and good options, 2017 and beyond. Right. It's just we got to get through this summer.
Yes.
And that's your motion at least lets these guys fish and makes it much less likely that we hit the ACL. It's more conservative than anything, way, way more conservative than we've ever fished.
My only concern with the motion and the second is that it really seems to be kind of off the cuff. We don't even have a projection on how close we would be to what we would like our target to be. That the numbers that staff has crunched here for the other options would say we'll reach the 215,000 pound mark most likely come the end of July with this, but then we would have this open until the end of August.
Again, those numbers would be based on if you believe the 2015 MRIP. So you're basing that, is that's a real number, when we don't have a clue. You know, 2014 we were under, 2013 we were under, 2012 we're under, 2015 we're way over. I don't know where 2016 would come in, wherever we are. But
well, then I guess I have an ask, and my ask would be that we have a rationale that I can use for the decisions we've made, so that when other states call me and say, this is forcing my fishery to close in Georgia next year on May 1st, why did you do it like that? I would at least have something I can tell them other than we kind of wanted the fish to the end of August. And
again, that would be making the assumption that only that assumes we're over the ACL. That only happens if we go over the ACL. And your answer would be that this we cut off September. We have reduced our bag limit tremendously. We have increased our minimum size. We made it only one big fish can be caught. We greatly reduced the our cobia regulations. And on top of that, we're shutting down a month earlier than North Carolina is.
And I think also to that is that we're not only looking at this fishery here, we're looking at the commerce of Virginia and all these people like the tackle shops and the gas stations and the bait shops and the clothes and the people who make the sunglasses and everything else. And so we're looking at it as a bigger picture than just the resource. We're taking active participation in managing a resource and conserving the resource, but we're also taking into consideration the economic effect. And what made a lot of difference to me, I know you don't want to fight the feds, but when you got three or four congressmen writing us a letter, they're the guys that control those people. And if they're asking us to say, hey, you know, we don't think that they did their job, I'm talking about their fisheries, did their job right, I think we can go to those guys and say, look, we got your letter, we considered it, we considered the economic effect on Virginia, we considered the watermen and everybody else, and we support your opinions to us that we didn't get our fair share, and we can probably use those guys to, if we have some adverse effect from these agencies, to go back into them and say, hey guys, you did it wrong, so don't punish VMRC. So I think you got a lot of ammo to go to these other states, from my perspective, anyway.
Other thoughts?
Go ahead.
Mr. Erskine.
I would also add that, you know, these are some pretty serious conservation equivalencies that this commission would be recommending, and it's not a blatant disregard for the suggestion, not necessarily a closure or a non-compliance issue. As we know, we are going to comply with the federal closure on June 20th. But the suggestion that we close state waters on June 20th, we are offering some of these conservation equivalencies, much like the other neighboring states. And unlike the other states, they gave no consideration to Virginia. So I'm not sure. I mean, I don't feel comfortable ignoring, as the commissioner suggested. Do you feel comfortable ignoring and just moving forward? No, I don't feel comfortable with that. I do feel more comfortable with conservation equivalencies that are defensible with the information that's available.
Chief.
Two questions. One for Mr. Zedron and Mr. Neal. This motion addresses the private boat, charter boat, but it doesn't address the shore-based mode.
It's a one fish per angler.
Yeah. You can add it in.
Yeah, and just two fish max.
And if I may comment just for Mr. Erskine, I think in a way, if you talk about this as a conservation equivalency, it's probably just more of a conservation measure, since we really don't have, in other words, conservation equivalency would be what else we did to achieve on paper with projections the ACT of 500,000 pounds. Here we're saying we have a conservative measure but we really don't, we're not saying that we're as equal to a June 20th closure in state water.
Understood, and that's a good distinction. I appreciate that. You know, if we had chosen from your table, then we would have had a conservation equivalency, correct? Right.
I would also like to add here a point that Mr. Erskine made, that this motion say that we will agree to comply with the federal closure on federal waters, and then in addition to this.
We don't really have jurisdiction federal waters.
I hear you say, and I hear your spirit with that, and I hear where you're trying to go with that, but telling the feds that we'll allow them to close the waters probably doesn't impress them very much.
I guess we could make a comment. I don't know if we don't need a part of this, but we can make a comment that we're doing this as conservation measures to keep our economy going for 2016 while we develop better plans 2017. So I mean, this is not something that I'm planning on being out of, and it's not the right word. I don't plan on us not following federal guidelines in the future. This is just to give our anglers time while we give the feds time to fix their mess.
Let me go on with that. My idea here is this, is to make it clear to the feds that we're going to comply with their closure on June 20th in federal waters. And I don't think they've dictated to us, at least what I've heard, that Virginia has to close it. They're asking us to consider closing it. And then what we've done here is to impose a restrictive limit in Virginia as per the motion. So I think it's important that we say that we're not – we didn't talk about non-compliance in federal waters. We're saying, fine, we're going to do that. But in addition to that, this is what we're going to do in Virginia. That's where Rob's coming from.
Other comments? Mr. Tankard.
Yeah, the gaffing, I'll just say, you know, fishing on Cape Charles, I see a lot of people gaffing fish that look like minnows. You know, they shouldn't be gaffing them, but for some reason they do. So I'm happy with, I'm okay. If you got to wrestle fish, so be it. I've seen big guys wrestle big fish. And then the mandatory reporting, well, I don't know if we really need that. I'll go with it if that is what you so need. But, you know, and as far as my perspective on the fishery, you know, we've had 20 years of this limit that we've had. And I agree, the fishery has, in my mind, grown. I've started fishing with this fishery with a guy in Newport News, Charlie Cochran, and he was absolutely absorbed with the fishery, and I've only seen it improve over my 20 years, and I can't talk to anybody else who doesn't see it the same way.
The motion is for mandatory reporting. It didn't say by permit.
I'm sorry, sir.
The motion was for mandatory reporting. It didn't say by permit.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
I'm not ruling out the permit. I just need to discuss that a little bit.
But I want to add on to that if I could, sir.
Yeah.
And the other part about it, when we come in front of ASMFC, we've had 20 years of solid conservation. So, yes, we might not have done exactly what they had hoped for this year, but we've had 20 years of very good conservation. So I think we have history on our side to a degree when we do eventually end up in front of ASMFC. So.
Oh, that'll be a good day. Mr. Ballard.
This is a tough one, and I think we're close, and I don't want to split hairs, but when I'm thinking about this, I feel like we can go a step further than August 30th. I'd be more in favor for something closer to July 30th. I'd be in favor for splitting the difference and maybe going August 15th. For me, mentally, there's just something about the whole summer, which is pretty much what August 30th is. And that we'll be painting a better picture by showing a little bit more conservation than we're doing with this motion.
I think we need to give these charter guys and the peers the summer. That's the whole point of this, is to give them their summer. Once the kids go back to school and stuff, you know, they're still fish here all through September, but at least it gives them the summer. This summer. Just gives them 2016 while we fix it. While we work on it 2017 and beyond.
Question, Commissioner? Question?
Yes.
That Lewis brings up, and if you noticed in our preferred and other proposals, we had a one fish limit if there's only one angler on the vessel. This has a two cobia vessel limit. We've had a one fish per person limit since 2002, so
it's supposed to be a one fish limit, maximum two per boat.
Right. That's what I'm talking
about. Right. You can wear it. You know, right.
Yeah, let's fix that. Yeah. I know exactly. That's a good catch, too.
Very good.
Mr. Zeter.
And, you know, respond to the over there, we're only talking about 2016. So I'm not talking about 17, 18, 19, 20. So that extra 15 days that we're talking about for people who earn a living on the water means a lot, especially considering the weather we've had. I would err on the side of the watermen and the businesses out there. 15 days to them could be the days that they make the profit. You know, that's the way I'm looking at it.
All right. Well, I think we're kind of a bit flying by the seat of our pants, but I understand where you're coming from here. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, Chief, you're the best man with numbers that I know. Can you ballpark what the catch would be?
No, 300,000? I think I'd have to go back. Let's see. We've got August 30th and a 2 on the boat limit, so... Right. If I'm creative, I might be able to get out of here for a second and get back to here, which should be already open, frankly. It's on the bottom? There you go. Thank you, Katie May. Now we know why you've gotten your PhD. So we had some options down here. And there is a table that you saw, so let me try and find that. Okay, we'll do it the slow way. Maybe not. Yeah, I'm going forward, you're right. That was easy. Holy cow. So, 2 fish, 40 inches is right here. It doesn't really contemplate the one over 50, but it shows that it would be July 26th. If there was a situation where this share, this unofficial share of 215,000 pounds, which is the average of our 2013-15 harvest, if that was something that was important, then, you know, August 30th would add quite a bit of harvest. I mean, you know, you would expect that when in 2014 was the only year out of 3 where July and August weren't the months as far as the major harvest goes. So,
well, let me make a quick observation here is that those calculations that staff made were made before the fish arrived, and they have arrived a couple weeks earlier than usual. So we're fishing on them now to some degree. Those intrepid souls out there in stormy weather. Just an observation.
Again, if we do nothing, if we kept status quo and did nothing, we cannot say we'd be over the ACO. We have no idea where the numbers will be coming in 2016. Doing this makes it much less likely. I mean, anything we do is restrictive, makes it less likely to go over the ACL. And the ACT numbers, that's just a number in the air that they pick to try to make it less likely going over the ACL. And so that's not a hard number. this is extremely conservationist. It's much more restrictive than we've ever come close to fishing. We can't say that even if we did nothing that we'd be violating the ACL. And again, it's just to let these guys have this summer while we try to fix this. We didn't create this. I mean, you talk about the great. This was a bad management plan.
and it's going to be better. You know, to give the SFAMC, I don't know if I get the script right, and NOAA credit, they've admitted this, and they're bending over backwards to fix it, but they can't do it this year. And so, okay, you can't do it this year. We'll work on it. We'll get it better next year. But this year, let's just don't kill our guys. Let's be be conservative, but let's let them fish this summer. And I can tell you, the cobia population is not going to collapse this summer. I promise you.
I would add 2016 behind that August 30th date.
Recreational.
Thank you.
You want to comment? Mm-hmm. August 15th?
No. Okay.
Any other comments? Any other discussion? We have a motion on the table, duly seconded. I'll call the question. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
No.
No.
Chair votes no, too. So let me count noes. No. Wayne France. Lynn. JJ. Wayne and me. And the other six, or the other five, were okay. Motion passes 5-4.
Well, that was unanimous. The mandatory reporting.
Yeah, let's address that.
The comment I've got on that is that the way regulation is written is for a...
Hold on a second. Gentlemen, if you're going to leave quietly. We still have some work to do here. Please, we still have work to do here, so can't hear ourselves over you.
Right.
Mr. Neal.
I'm assuming this was kind of patterned after the striped bass permitting and reporting, that kind of thing.
I mean, our idea, and we didn't have enough of a discussion on this, is kind of a hybrid between the striped bass requirement reporting and the tilefish grouper, which has been in place since 2009. Tilefish grouper is to the vessel. So the question is, the only way to know who would be complying is if they declare into the fishery, right? With the commercial mandatory reporting, everyone has a license. If we haven't heard from them that month, we know they didn't comply. We need to know who is part of this fishery, so there has to be a permit involved, in my opinion. And is it each and every person that goes out to fish for this fish, or is it a vessel requirement, and so a charter captain or the for-hire fleet, that someone could be responsible for that vessel?
Well, see, there's your issue, is that, and then you gain, there's one of the reasons North Carolina kept their fishery open, and the reason Buck Row Pier, there's a significant pier fishery for these fish. And so how are we going to deal with that? You know, if so the permit is for who? Whom? That's the question. Each individual. If it's a boat permit, you're not covering everybody. And then what do you do with someone who catches a fish on the pier or from the beach or whatnot? And then the other thing that I have is that cobia fishermen. Some are cobia fishermen, but honestly, every single person that fishes in the Chesapeake Bay is a cobia fisherman. A significant portion of a lot of cobia are caught by flounder fishermen. All right, I've caught them fishing for croaker. I've caught them trolling Clark spoons for Spanish mackerel. I've caught them on little pieces of clam for spade fish. I've caught them on big pieces of clam for drum. I've caught them offshore drum fish. I trolled for tuna. I've caught them out there. I've caught them jigging for amberjack. And so I guess the thing is that we want to have mandatory reporting, but if some flounder fisherman catches a cobia, a legal cobia. And I'm not talking about 2000. I'm talking about forever, because I'm assuming we're going to do mandatory reporting from now on. Are we going to give them a ticket, or are we going to give them the opportunity to report that cobia? And so, I don't know the right answers, but so mandatory reporting is something to do. But you almost, if you're going to do that, you almost have to give a permit to everyone that's got a saltwater license. And so I don't know how you do that, because not everyone catches cobia. A lot of cobia are incidental catches, or almost accidental catches. And I don't want to be given tickets to some grand ball flounder fishing that catches a cobia.
So the only thing I can say is, and I can point out that this wasn't discussed at FMAC, they didn't get this far on the recommendation. If we modeled this after the striped bass, and it's important to note that it's the trophy striped bass permit only, and it's all tilefish grouper, it goes back to possession. So if you kept that fish, then you should have had the permit. And that's the case in both of those species. I can't say whether or not that would be, you know, is the way, that's also the way it's drafted here in our draft, but only because it's modeled on those.
Right, and that's my issue with that.
That's a bigger question for the
committee. Tilefish grouper's easy, because you're going out there, you're going 60 miles, you're going after those things. And so that's easy. If you're really fishing for rockfish, I mean, you can have an incidental catch for rockfish. And that was another thing. The rockfish, that's a boat permit? The trophy? It is individual? Okay, fine. Then forget that.
It's a trophy, but
right, it's for trophy.
I was thinking about earlier when you were addressing this, given that we're going to have to start it up on pretty quick, this may be the year to just get it started, make it available online, get the interest, and give time for everyone to adjust to the fact, and throughout 2016, promote it a little bit better through Facebook, through, you know, on our website, things like that, so that no one's, first of all, left out unless they really are paying attention to anything that's going on, either through clubs, website, Facebook, anything else. And then 2017, we're ready to go, because as you indicated, it's even tough to know what the other states are going to do now. So, you know, we have a little bit of time, I think, regardless of where this turns out on the fishing season and the harvest, where we have found before, if we jump into something, even though this was proposed last year, it's still jumping into something because we've never been able to corner all the barriers. And perhaps it would be good to just make this a trial run.
Mr. Fritz, I was just going to say, you know, if somebody is in the fishing for croaker or something else and they incidentally catch a cobia and want to keep it, they should have the opportunity to just go online at that time and register it, and then they're covered.
And I guess we have that technology. If we have a method of them applying for their permit, after, you know, someone's not a cobia fisher, if we advertise enough that at least they, almost like your fisherman identification number. You know, if I got someone on the boat with me that doesn't have one, I can get on the phone and I can get their number.
With a 12-month license, the way it's been for several years, you need to have notice that you are buying a license that is there. You should get a cobia permit if they intend to fish for cobia, or even if they don't, but they could encounter cobia. You need something that when they buy that license, either online or through an agent.
You're talking about the regular fishing license that we make that notice to every modern fisherman. Really, every saltwater fisherman in Virginia is a potential cobia fisherman.
They'd be welcome to have the permit even if they didn't fish. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a lot for, you know, making a mandatory right now, quite frankly. To just come out of the gate with what we've been through today with this issue, and, you know, I think it's probably a trial might be the best way to do it.
Those are just the points I wanted to consider, because, you know, I want some guy that catches a cobia from Buckrow Pier to be able to keep his cobia.
No, those are all. And there's one other point that I'd like to make, going back to Mr. Zijon's comment. So the technology is there for somebody to be on the water holding the cobia, get the permit, and report it that day. The technology is there to do that. But for staff to ensure compliance, that everybody reports daily, we have a staff of 7 individuals that work with 3,000 watermen. Only about half of those are active, and it takes us months to bring an individual before you for not complying with reporting, because we give them all the due diligence of making sure that they get those reports in, to ensure that somebody reported, you know, with the potential of there being tens of thousands of individuals that might want to go recreational fishing, to ensure that one of them reported that day isn't something we can do.
What I envision is putting the burden on the fisherman. So when he pulls up in the on the slip and the marine resource police officer's there, he's going to say, did you report that fish? And instead of making you guys go find that guy, the police officer just asked me, did you report the fish?
And yeah, there are some species in North Carolina was dangerously close to going to kind of a check-in station type situation. What they do with some of the highly migratory species, where that fish can't leave that vessel unless it was proven to be checked in.
Well, Mrs. Cohn.
There's no call-in technology that we can use?
We do have a call-in number, but it has to be, you know, that has to be checked by a person each day, and those lines can get overloaded. There's only a certain number of mailboxes available. So even with our mandatory reporting for our commercial fishery, again, out of the 1,000 people that are reporting, something like the FIP, where we actually pay a company to staff those calls, it's an extreme expense to the agency to do that.
It's a really good comment, because with the federal identification program, the FIP, we found that people still want to call.
Really?
Not everyone wants to be online. Yep. So, and we should incorporate that situation where calling is an option. We'll work on that. But there are limitations, as Joe has indicated. And then if I may ask a question to the commissioner and everyone else, we have an effective date of May 25, 2016 in the regulation. We initially started with June 1, but we weren't really sure what was going to transpire. So this regulation for COBIA and the changes are now scheduled for May 25th. Is that what the commission would like to? Like to go back to the June 1 effective date. What that means is the provisions will take place when we're passed, but the effective date of the regulation will be June 1 or May 25th. It's your choice.
Seems to me you need June 1 to get ourselves a little bit more organized.
Well, thank you. I had to ask.
Me.
Okay, so June 1.
I didn't think earlier than June 1 was even an option. Impressive.
Does that work for everybody?
Yes.
Effective June 1.
Very good.
I'm kind of.
And that's another thing, is these new regulations are going into place before the June 20th, but you know, the FinFish was recommended going to after the federal closure. So we've given 20 more days of.
Let me jump off with something that Lynn was trying to say in there. What kind of expense or difficulty would be to set up a COBIA hotline? Kind of like we do with the waterman mandatory reporting issues. And then it's a messaging issue, at least to start, which is COBIA, catch a COBIA, give a call.
Well, we have those lines. We have Black Sea Bass hotline. Joe knows better how the lines.
Yeah, there's only a few lines. Most of them are dedicated. I think we have completely open, one or two that are clear, but they only hold 50 to 60 messages.
I'll tell you what, they're going to have my phone line.
I'm happy to give up my phone.
Eric Barth has given numbers on what each call for the FIP costs, but it is quite a high cost to have a service that's an answering service.
Seemed like a good solution.
Well, where does that leave us?
Well, I guess the thing is that even though we advertise the heck out of they need to get this free online, this free permit that is available online, and I just would like to give that whoever that's not a cobia fisherman that catches a cobia the opportunity to get on his phone and get that at least the number of his free permit and report it, so he doesn't have to. So he can keep his COBIA without getting. Even he hadn't gotten his permit ahead of time, and so even though people still prefer to go online, at least we give them that option. It was just give them one more means of going. It's just COBIA. Just they're going extinct, but they're everywhere, and you catch them just about any way you fish. Like I said, literally, I've caught them fishing for anything you can think of. I've caught cobia, little teeny hooks, and it's just crazy. And so people catch them. George Head's left. I think his big, you know, he had an 85 pound cobia he caught during a flounder tournament. So it was just on a little, you know, flounder rig. And so there're going to be people who aren't cobia fishermen that catch a legal cobia, except for this mandatory reporting, this pre-permit. So I'd like to have them to have that chance to not get a ticket.
We have 50 open calls, Joe says. We hold 50 calls. So it would seem, again, even though this would be what I call a trial run, it could be set up so that the permit is online, instructions are that if you encounter and harvest and possess a cobia but do not have a permit, you need to call this number. Otherwise, you need to have a permit. So the chances are that there are 50 individuals who won't have a permit but encounter, harvest, and possess a cobia seems like manageable.
Yeah.
And we mm-hmm. can set it up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to be looking for next year, we're going to be looking at sort of an informal compliance rate. It's not mandatory, but we're going to be looking to see just what kind of returns we get, because as Joe has said before, the trophy strike pass was mandatory to get 43% compliance. So I think cobia would be a little more important for folks to report with everything.
And 8 to 5, is when our lines are open, you know, we take any calls we can. We would be able to talk people through a permit process when we're not here. It's difficult. Striped bass, there's about 2,500 trophy permits that were signed up for. We are seeing quite a few paper permits still coming in. But the majority are using online reporting. So that could be done any time of day or night. It could be done from the water if you've got, you know, the ability to do that. When we're here, if they have technical difficulties, pretty much anyone on staff will talk them through it or even enter the report form if they're struggling through that. But issuing a permit when somebody's on the water would be a lot more difficult. Like the FIP number. Again, that goes back to we're paying somebody to sit there for answer that call, but the reporting part of it we could probably cover pretty well.
And I guess, again, if that person has reported that cobia, there's got to be some way for that to be known so that the Marine Patrol officer doesn't get them at the ramp and give them a ticket.
Notify law enforcement and show them what the requirements are, then they will know. They just have to ask and hope that person says, well, I'm just about to call, or I already called.
This is not a problem for cobia fishermen. This is just, there's so many cobia caught flounder fishing and other things. Flounder fishing in particular. There are a lot of flounder fishermen out there. There's a lot of cobia caught drifting around for flounder.
I, to that point here, I would hope the entire charter fleet that lands a cobia that any of their clients do would be immediately calling in for this to make sure they report this. I think everybody understands now the benefits of having at least some data that's Virginia-centric and a little bit better or a lot better than what we've been seeing them dealing with and the ramifications that we have to address as a result.
Yeah, that brings up another thing. The charter boats. So they already have mandatory reporting?
Right to ask, they have a charter permit. It's requested that 15 days after the season, and we have a lot of trouble with the charter reporting. That's from my experience.
So, same kind of deals, yeah. I guess with the charter boats. Yeah. Yeah, I know, I know. And one of their rationales when they're talking to me is that they already have mandatory reporting. So I guess they're reporting to somebody, supposed to be anyway.
Well, I think the offshore fishery is reporting to the federal government. The inshore fishery isn't required to report to anybody.
Okay. So
that's my understanding. So is that correct?
The federal for-hire fleets, yeah, yeah. They have vessel trip reporting with this, pretty much the same requirement.
Okay. Now, the question is, are the individuals on a charter boat, the paying customers, are we going to have them have a license? Or is it, will we have a boat license for a charter boat? I would think so, too. All right, that was. I just thought we needed to discuss this a little bit.
And maybe FMAC.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, at this point, Mike, might as well.
I just ask a question so you have a complete discussion.
Thank you.
Should there be any special considerations for inspected vessels? You've got some inspected vessels that carry 8, 10, 12 passengers who target those. They're the first ones they'll call you.
And the answer is yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's already done. That's two per boat.
Yep.
To the Queen Mary.
Yep.
The boats that mean
you're
the
boat. Yeah, both, both, actually.
Is there anything else for the good of the order?
No.
Nothing else. No other agenda item here. So with that, I will very, very joyously adjourn the meeting.
Too bad.